Welcome to Quest for Gold. We are now 100 days out from the Winter Olympics in Milan Cortina. I'm Ryan Burrow, and we're in New York City this week to celebrate with Team USA. This is the Team USA Media Summit, an opportunity for the USOPC to showcase athletic talent, prepare the media for the upcoming games, highlight sponsorships, and of course, kick off promotion of the games into high gear. We've spoken with a lot of athletes, everyone from ice dancing couple Madison Chalk and Evan Bates to speed skater Jordan Stoltz. Even skier Lindsey Vonn is here, who's currently looking to qualify after coming off a six-year retirement from the sport. We're going to get to those interviews and Q&As throughout this Quest for Gold season, but I wanted to kick things off with the meeting with USOPC leadership. There's a lot going on now ahead of the Olympic Games. They're setting goals, finalizing plans, and, of course, looking to the future. There were some great questions about security, the decentralization of athlete villages, transgender issues, expectations for athletes participating, and you may recognize a voice in the Q&A portion.
Hello, everyone. Wake up if the Starbucks didn't do that for you. Hold on, before I go, I got this queued up. We'll see if this works.
Yeah.
It's the only way us NBC employees boot up to start the day. Okay. All right, now I'm ready to go. Thanks for being here, everyone. We are here to celebrate 100 days out for the Winter Games, Olympic and Paralympics, Milan Cortina. We're going to have 50 or more hopefuls for you guys to hear from and talk to over the next couple of days. So hopefully you can fill up your notebooks from what they say and what we say up here with the Leadership Council. Let me introduce our leadership panel. Sarah Hirschlin, you're familiar with everyone up here, but Sarah is the Chief Executive Officer of the USOPC. Rocky Harris, the Chief of Sport and Athlete Services for the USOPC. Nicole Deal, Chief of Security and Athlete Services of the USOPC. Dr. Jonathan Finoff, the Chief Medical Officer of the USOPC, and Gene Sykes, the Board Chair and President of the USOPC, in case you didn't know and wanted to hear just one more time. So we will have about 20 minutes of my questions here. We'll hopefully leave 20 minutes that you can ask your Q&A. So Sarah, we'll start with you. Congratulations, first off, on a highly successful Paris Games. So now here we are, a year and a half later, Winter Games. We've got a couple U.S. Games coming up on the horizon. So as the leader of the USOPC, what are your thoughts as we head into another Games here?
Yeah, well, as you alluded to, we have a lot going on. It's a busy time in the Olympic and Paralympic movement, not just in the U.S., but around the world. But we have to start with Milan Cortina, 100 days out. You know, it's game time. And athletes are staring at the beginning of a winter season here that will culminate with the games in Milan Cortina. And so the anticipation is building. The training intensifies, as you can imagine. But the excitement is also building. And we're very, very encouraged by what Team USA promises to be by the time we get to Milan Cortina. So we're feeling, I think, as bullish as ever about the winter team that we'll bring with us to Milan Cortina here in 100 days or less. And I think we also have to be really honest that we're excited to be in Italy. Milan Cortina's preparations are really coming together. It's a fragmented footprint, and frankly, that's potentially an advantage for Team USA. We pride ourselves on being the most prepared team out there, and so when there are challenges to fit into a footprint, our opportunity is to use that to our advantage, and that's how we're thinking about it. So we're preparing for Milan Cortina in all of the challenges and the fragmentation and, you know, sort of the puzzle that it will give us. But it's worth noting, our athletes are comfortable in Italy. They compete there often. Many of them train there. So it is not a strange location for them. They'll feel right at home. We'll add a layer to ensure they feel right at home. But Italy is a place that we know we can shine. So we're going in pretty bullish from a Team USA perspective, and we're excited about that.
Yeah, we're excited too. As you can see, the backdrop of Paris was such a huge part of the broadcast for us. I think it'll be the same thing with Italy. And as we saw, the time difference actually can be advantageous with the prime and being able to just curate some of the best events. So I think from a broadcasting standpoint, Italy is very solid. Rocky, you're in charge with the high performance training for these athletes, all the hopefuls, the NGBs, you're working with them as well as you try to drive Team USA to higher and higher heights. So just give me a lay of the land right now with where you guys are at.
Yeah, Sarah said it well. We're excited about our winter sports and the athletes right now. And we're projecting about 294 athletes as of today, 225 Olympic athletes, 69 Paralympic athletes, and only 14 have qualified by name. So we have a lot of work to do in the next 100 days to get the full team there. And our winter sports have had a lot of success recently. We saw it with figure skating. They've qualified every full teams in every discipline for the first time since 1984. We saw it with hockey, winning 3 gold medals at world championships with the men's, women, and sled hockey team. And all of our winter sports are on the rise. And it's actually intentional. It's something that hasn't happened by accident. We've coordinated very closely with our national governing bodies. Years ago, we created a winter sport strategic plan along with them and collaborated with them to align around where the USOPC can make the biggest impact for winter sport. And our foundation created a winter sport fund that we are now having more resources to invest directly into winter sport athletes and national governing bodies. And we've gotten a lot better at investing those resources in high impact initiatives, technology and innovation, equipment, training. So we've across the board really put a focus on winter sport. And we expect big things in Milan Cortina and to perform at a high level in both the Olympics and Paralympics.
Yeah, high performance is that's an easy story for us to tell. Yes. You know, records being broken, things being done that have never been done before. And so the history is always part of the game story. The athletes that we know, the legends of the game are going to be a story. And then we always learn some new names. So help us out there with who we should be looking at for these games.
Yeah, actually, Dr. Finoff and I were talking about as we walked into this room and saw the Team USA athletes around and what an honor and privilege it is for us to work with these great athletes. And many of them are household names. But there are some storylines that we also think are important. We have two sports, actually, that have never won a medal for Team USA at the Winter Games. One Olympic sport, which is biathlon, and Campbell Wright won 2 silver medals at the World Championships this last year. We have a real potential to break that streak. And in Paralympics, it's wheelchair curling. We've never won a medal in, and we have great opportunity to win a medal there. So I think that's a great story to follow, is to really round out our winter sports and win medals there. For some up-and-coming young talent, there's so many. I'll name maybe one sport in snowboarding. There's a 17-year-old, Ollie Martin, who won 2 medals at the World Championships. Youngest athlete to do a 21-60. And for those of us who aren't math majors, that's 6 times around. Yeah, we also have a para snowboarder and Kate Delson, who first season, and she came in and won a medal at the World Championships. But I think that just shows the breadth and depth of Team USA. And, of course, we have our legends that are out there in both Olympic and Paralympic sport, and many of them are here as well.
I am immediately going on YouTube and looking for the 21-60.
Incredible.
I can't even.
And I think you did that when he was 16.
In my
old,
mind.
So, yeah.
This is a question I'm going to ask Nicole here in a second, but Rocky, first for you. This game is so unique because it's so spread out. And so what goes into it for you in making sure that the athletes have everything they need when you've got to navigate the Italy terrain here?
Yeah, and for Sarah said it well, we really take pride in the team behind the team, which is the USOPC staff and our NGB partners, to work together to remove all distractions for Team USA and set them up for success. And with 6 different clusters for the Olympics and 3 for the Paralympics, we are going to be decentralized instead of centralized like we normally are. So we've had to be creative with our NGB partners to come up with the right service levels in each cluster to make sure our athletes get all the services that they need. And we're confident in our plan. We're really confident in Italy and the plan that they have. And we saw even the sliding track open this week, and that was one of the venues that people were concerned about. So they're ready, we're ready, and I know that Dr. Finoff and Nicole will talk about security and sports medicine as well.
Yeah, so Nicole is as head of security. We were talking about this 18 months ago on how the unique challenges of Paris and the River Seine and the opening ceremony there, and now here we go again with the unique challenges. As Rocky mentioned, the geography of these games is unlike any that we've seen before, and so how have you guys gone about planning to make sure that all the athletes and everyone involved is safe as possible?
Yeah, definitely. Like Rocky said, it's going to be decentralized, and Team USA, behind the team, we won't be able to be at all the locations at all the time. So we're working with our partners at the U.S. Department of State, and engaging with diplomatic security agents so they can be in those physical areas where we're not able to be. So they'll be serving as force multipliers for our security team, making sure Team USA athletes have the resources and that security comfort that they're used to, even though we won't be able to physically be there all the time.
Yeah, okay. I'm sure you will have some questions from the audience here in just a second, but Dr. Finoff, on the security and safety and health almost all go hand in hand. Very busy time for you right now, successful games in Paris as well. But what are your priorities and what have they been for keeping the athletes, you know, healthy, not only during the games, but as they train and as we get to some of the qualifiers coming up?
Yeah, that's a great question. So we know that Team USA are the best athletes in the world, but even the best athletes have to be healthy in order to achieve their personal best. So we're a very data-driven organization. We have a great research team on sports medicine. So we know that on average, about 30% of our Olympic athletes and 45% of our Paralympic athletes are either injured or ill at the games. They still compete, they still train, but they're not going to achieve their personal best if they're not healthy. We know that on average, if you're injured or ill, you drop about four places. So if you were going to be a gold medalist, you're now fourth place. So it's super, super important going into the games that our athletes are healthy. So we focus on the top three injuries that they may sustain at the games and put in place injury prevention programs. We focus on nutrition and sleep because those make a huge difference, not only in performance, but also preventing injury and illness. And then we do a lot of the standard injury and illness or illness prevention measures, such as face masking, washing your hands and stuff. But we go so far as saying on a plane, you should be more in the middle of the plane and on a window seat because you have less exposure to people passing up and down the aisles. When you're adjusting your overhead air, put it so that it blows air between you and the adjacent person so that it creates a shield so that you're not going to have as much exposure to their germs. So we really get in depth in those areas. And we have six different villages. We have 75 staff that are going to be at the Olympic Games and 25 staff at the Paralympic Games, but they're going to be spread over six and three Olympic and Paralympic villages, respectively. And while we have staff to go to all those villages, we have international collaborations to work with some other nations so that we have all of the supplies at all of those locations, because having six different locations with every medical supply that you're bringing over, and we're bringing over 15 cargo pallets of medical supplies.
Wow.
So we're preparing and we're doing collaborations to make sure that Team USA gets world-class comprehensive care.
Wow, that's super interesting. As a lover of the window seat in an airplane, who knew I was also being very safe
using
that seat? I like that.
Ahmed, yeah. The tagline, you can tell that sports medicine folks are marketers.
Yeah.
Don't let a cold keep you from gold.
Absolutely. That's a great one. That is a great one. Don't get it in the first place. Tell that person on the airplane not to talk to you. I'm competing for a gold medal.
Exactly.
Can you talk briefly on the expansion of mental health support and how that is impacted and how that is manifested and how Team USA operates here?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, mental health is a big priority for the USOPC. Going into the games, we know that 50% of Olympic athletes and 60% of Paralympic athletes are going to report some symptoms of a mental health concern. That is a large percentage of our athletes. At the games, 20% of our medical encounters, and in Paris we had 5,000 medical encounters, 20% of those are mental health related. So we had 1,000 medical encounters that are mental health related. And outside of the games, you know, we know that there are crises that people are facing. We've had 130 hospitalizations for mental health crises in 19 different countries for Team USA athletes in the last 5 years. So we have built an incredibly robust program to support our athletes through the hiring of 16 dually certified mental health and mental performance providers, having an emergency hotline that works 24/7 anywhere in the world, having virtual consultation services with over 500 psychological services professionals for our Team USA athletes, doing screening examinations for our athletes in preparation for the games, having mental health emergency action plans for all six of our locations. So we're really, really focused on it, and we're very lucky that this has been something that the leadership and, frankly, the public and all of our partners have really focused on is the health and mental well-being of Team USA athletes.
Yeah, and focusing on it more leads to more learnings about it, and then you can help athletes in the future. That's awesome to hear. Gene, you're right in the middle of it all with Team USA, the USOPC, with the IOC. You're also involved with LA 28. You got Salt Lake City, Utah 34 coming up here. So I'll just ask you, and you're probably the best person to ask, your general thoughts about the upcoming games here and both the movements of the Olympic and Paralympic Games.
Sure. Well, thanks, Ahmed. First of all, I'd say this is evidence of just how much excitement there is about Milano Cortina. And we've been hearing about this for so long. To know that we're 100 days away from it is incredibly exciting. It's a great moment. I would echo everything that this team has to say about the quality of our athletes and our expectations for success in Italy. And I would say the Italians are, if not completely prepared, it's not going to be like, you know, running the games in New York City, for example. They will be prepared, and it will have incredible style and elan, and it will be a very, very memorable experience. Everything they've done so far to sort of present themselves shows how much enthusiasm they have about their responsibilities, and I think it will be an incredible experience for every athlete and every spectator and everyone who sees the games on NBC.
We definitely believe that. All right, before I open it up for question and answer, is there anything else anyone from the panel wants to say? Speak now or forever hold your peace.
I'm going to flag one thing that's super important. And,
yep.
You know, you talked a little bit about all the mental health and all the resources, and we can't do that without the support of both the corporate community and the individual philanthropic community. It's no surprise to anybody in this room that we're 100% privately funded, and those resources come from these things. Something really special is happening in Milan Cortina, thanks to the largest contribution we've ever received in history from Ross Stevens and the Stevens Awards, which will start to grant athletes who make the Milan Cortina team each $100,000 cash award and $100,000 life insurance policy. And it speaks to, you know, our goal of supporting athletes. Health and wellness is critical. Financial stability is a huge part of a holistic well-being, a sense of peace, and that's important for Team USA athletes. So I wanted to flag that and just note that's something new and different around Milan Cortina that we're super excited about.
Yeah, I know it was a topic, you know, a year and a half ago, and supporting the athletes and how that can best be done in a changing environment with everything that's around it, and so that's awesome to hear. All right, we got about 23 and a half minutes now. We got, I think John is out there, Olivia may be out there, Kate with a microphone passing around, so if you raise your hand, we will bring a microphone to you. If you could introduce yourself, say hi, tell us one fun fact about you. No, you don't have to do that.
Oh, it's going for you, Doug.
If the microphones work, I will run out with my microphone if we have to do that.
I got another one.
Testing, testing.
You should have tried turning it on. I hate being first. I'm Steve Buckley from The Athletic. Dr. Finoff, you spoke of mental health-related issues, and I was wondering, I have to assume the athletes have their own preventative measures in place and support teams and so forth, but on a grand scale, is there any preventative medicine, quote-unquote, that can be put in place to prevent some of these issues?
Absolutely. I think that's a great question because obviously the best way of addressing a problem is not having the problem to begin with. So we have a lot of resources in place to try to help identify somebody that may be experiencing mental health stressors before they're actually experiencing a clinical mental health condition. And so some of those are things like WellTrack, which is an app that they can take some self-assessments on, and it gives them some simple, easy steps that they can move forward with doing self-help. And if they score above a certain level, then it flags one of our staff to reach out to them directly in order to provide them with the resources that they need. In addition, we do a thing called the Sport Mental Health Assessment Tool Screen prior to the games and as part of elite athlete health profiles that occur on a yearly or every other year basis for our top tier athletes. So essentially a fancy pre-participation physical. And the sport mental health assessment tool looks at six different domains, so depression, anxiety, a bunch of different areas. And it looks for normative data, and if they score outside of that normal range, then it flags us to work with that athlete, even if they're not clinically having a mental health condition, if they're just starting to experience some symptoms, so we can intervene early and be more effective. And the last thing is that we do a mental health first aid education program for athletes, coaches, and staff, so that they can identify mental health conditions, intervene in a mental health crisis, almost like CPR for cardiac conditions. But it helps people to recognize when they are experiencing mental health problems or others around them are experiencing mental health problems and what resources are available to intervene. And we've created our own program called Team Up, and we're doing that with a couple of the professional leagues for education of our staff and athletes.
Hi, I'm Bianca Hillier. I work for The World, a public radio show. There have been some tragic and fatal accidents on the slopes, and the global governing body has, this is for you, Dr. Finoff, sorry. The global governing body has introduced a number of new safety measures for this upcoming season. Just last week, they said that they'd conduct a detailed audit of downhill courses, training courses around the world. Do you think enough is being done on the global level to prevent these accidents? And if not, what would you like to see?
Yeah, so as our athletes get stronger, the equipment gets better, the challenges that we put in front of our athletes are more demanding, the tricks that they're trying to perform have more skill, all of those things come at higher risk. And when there are higher risks, we have to learn from those and try to create safety. And I'll give you some examples. So if you look at some of the slope-style parks, originally, when they were designing them, it was kind of best guess at the takeoff and the landing zones. And if they didn't guess well, it could be catastrophic, not just with serious injuries, but truly death, because these are death-defying types of things that people are doing. We've thrown a whole bunch of, and by we, I mean the international community has thrown a bunch of research and resources behind trying to identify ways that they can protect the athletes and minimize the risk in inherently dangerous sports. And so to answer your question, are we doing the right things? I think we're learning each time there is an advance in the technique, equipment, and what's happening on the hill, and then trying to modify to make it as safe as possible, recognizing that these are incredibly, incredibly dangerous events.
Rocky, how does your team work in conjunction with that? Because you are part of the group trying to, you know, achieve the highest performance possible, but do it in a safe way.
Yeah, fortunately, right before I joined the USOPC, we integrated sports medicine, sport performance into one team that I oversee. So they work hand in hand on everything from, because of course, we want our athletes to be healthy. If they show up to the start line healthy, we're going to perform well. So we don't see it as two different things. Athlete safety, athlete well-being comes first. So we always care about that most, and then the performance is right behind that. So they work very closely together. We saw that in Paris in real time when Dr. Finoff and Finn Kerwin, our head of Olympic sport, worked hand in hand on many things with track and field and different sports to keep athletes safe. But safety is always going to come first.
Hi, I'm Becky Sullivan with NPR. This is a question for Sarah. I know earlier this summer, You'd think NPR could use a microphone. But I know Milan is the focus right now, but I wanted to ask about some of these legislative proposals in Congress around college sports, because obviously the Olympics come up as something that everybody cares about. I know you had some concerns with the SCORE Act earlier this summer regarding funding for Olympic sports. I just wanted to see what your thoughts are on the state of the bill now and the proposal by a group of Senate Democrats a few weeks ago called the SAFE Act.
Yeah, and let me clarify. We're not we believe legislation is needed, and we support a lot of the components of the legislation that's being put out there. What we don't think is that the SCORE Act went far enough. So our push was not to say we don't like the act. Our push was to say, and let's do a little bit more. Because the act essentially, the good news is it actually acknowledges the preservation of a certain, right, a 16-sport minimum, a broad-based sport on campus. That's our message. We've been relentless and consistent with members of Congress saying it is critical as you legislate around college sports to put in protections and provisions that will protect broad-based sport on campus. That's important not only for Team USA, but it's important for the culture of sport in our country. It is the right thing. The sport, the education-based sports system we have in this country is the envy of our peers around the world, and we believe strongly in protecting it. So we are advocating, and we're advocating to preserve that broad-based sport component on campus, whether that's in the SCORE Act, the SAFE Act, or other bills that may come. But we are very supportive of legislation and believe that it will help the system sort of stabilize and, frankly, to thrive in the future.
Good morning. I'm here from Salt Lake City, Utah, Lisa Roche from Deseret News. And of course, I have a question about 2034. Our games will be very different than what you're going to see in Milan Cortina, more traditional single village, everything's close. What lessons can you bring back from Italy to help prepare for the next U.S. Winter Olympics? Thank you.
Well, Lisa, it's no surprise to you that we'll have a number of our friends from the now emerging Utah 34 organizing group. And so they're, you know, beginning to ramp up a true organization with just a handful of staff members, but an enormous community of folks in Utah and Salt Lake who have experience with the games from 2002 and are back involved and saying, hey, let's build the next generation of folks here in Utah who can help steer a home games and a winter game. So we'll have lots of friends come with us, and we'll be in Italy watching what today's winter games are like, learning from the operational experiences, et cetera. And frankly, they'll have another go at it in 2030. So there will be a nice run here. But I can tell you, and this is no surprise, the folks in Utah and we at their side as their partners are very excited about also pushing the boundaries and doing things that haven't been done before around the Winter Games. So we have an opportunity here to continue to advance the movement in both the Olympic and Paralympic sport side of things. And what Mother Nature has granted Utah is an incredible gift of the proximity of an enormous valley and huge infrastructure in the city with really nice proximity to the mountains and the villages. So you're right. It will be a footprint that lends itself to the opposite of fragmentation that gives us opportunities to do things that not everybody has the benefit of doing. So it's on us to make that count.
Good morning. Nick Wolliver, Olympic Rings and Other Things. My question's for Nicole or anyone who could answer. To what extent has the government shutdown, now at about day 28, created speed bumps or challenges in or delays in your work with the State Department? Is there anything specific that's on hold that will be a relief to resolve once the shutdown ends?
I'll take that one. No, we have not had any speed bumps due to the shutdown. I actually was in Milan with the State Department team and the embassy team on the ground when the shutdown occurred. And we have been meeting regularly, weekly, like we normally do. They're still meeting with the Italian security to make sure everything's in place for Team USA. So at this point, there hasn't been any challenges that will prevent us or change our plans and our operations going into Milan Cortina.
Hi, I'm Ryan Burrow with WGN Radio in Chicago. This is probably a question for Rocky Harris, but anyone else who wants to chime in. Can you talk about folding NHL players into Team USA, the conversations that are being had with teams and players, making sure they fit the standards you've set out? Or is it kind of hands-off until they take their season break?
Yeah, we're thrilled the NHL's back in the games. We think that's going to do a lot, not only for the sport of hockey, but for our country to get excited about the games in a way that we haven't in quite some time. So, and quite frankly, these are professionals, right? The support that we give is very targeted to USA Hockey's pipeline and making sure that the women's program and the sled hockey program are going to have a high impact. We're also doing a pre-games camp with the NHL players. We've done one already, and we're going to do another one. So it's pretty hands-off, quite frankly, with the NHL players. Now it's about the right coaching and the right game plan, and USA Hockey has that in place right now. We're really confident in that, but I would say overall we're thrilled that the NHL's back, that the players are back across the world, not just for Team USA. It's going to bring a new level of excitement that we haven't seen in 12 years.
Hi, Nancy Armour from USA Today Sports. This is probably either for Sarah or Nicole. We have seen at the Four Nations tournament last year American athletes being booed pretty vociferously. And I'm curious of what advice you're giving to your athletes in anticipation that Americans won't necessarily be well received on the world stage.
I'll start, and Nicole, you can jump in if you want. I mean, Nancy, I think, you know, we talk to Team USA athletes as they're competing in, you know, sort of routine international competitions, and are always thoughtful about what they're experiencing. And so we have gotten questions from athletes who are wondering how they're going to be received, and is there anything I need to be, you know, doing differently or thinking about differently? And the reality is, I don't think we've had anyone suggest that they don't feel safe, and I'll let Nicole comment on that. But they certainly are conscious of how they might be perceived, and we're conscious of trying to help them feel really comfortable. The one thing that they can be incredibly proud of is being part of a team of incredible elite athletes across a wide range of sports that are there actually as a unifying force for this country. And that's something that really resonates with the community of athletes and resonates, frankly, with the general public and everything we're doing. And so our focus is on recognizing the good power of sport and celebrating that and using that as the anchor to feel really proud about what we're doing. And I think that's resonated strongly with athletes, and that's the torch we're carrying.
Agreed. I haven't spoken to any athlete that's concerned about going into Milan Cortina by representing Team USA. I think they're super excited. They're motivated, and they're taking that energy to propel them and motivate them.
Luckily, we live in the era of social media, so we are very well practiced in receiving negative feedback at times. So.
Hi, Jackson Thompson, Fox News. My question is for Sarah. In July, the USOPC updated its athlete safety policy to comply with the president's executive order to protect women's sports. In August, the president suggested there would be a strong form of genetic testing at LA 28 to protect the women's category. As USOPC CEO, would you support genetic testing to protect the women's category?
The USOPC isn't in the role of defining eligibility for sport per se. So each international federation is taking the approach to define what that policy or what the eligibility criteria and parameters for their sport is. And then on a national level, our respective national governing bodies are doing that. We're here to be supportive and helpful, as you referred to, our safety policy. You heard Rocky say safety comes first, and it always needs to come first. So we'll be really focused on that. But at the end of the day, defining eligibility for competitions has to happen at the individual sport level, whether that's globally or nationally.
Hi, it's Eddie Pels from AP. Little bit of the same topic. I know that FIS recently said they were going to institute a gender testing with the swab. What's your role in trying to make sure your athletes get that done? Are you having any pushback on that? And then a little bit more on gender. I know there was a little bit of a tweak of your own policy about transgender sports. Can you talk about maybe some of the discussions in the board or how that came about?
I can talk about the testing
sure.
part of it. So from a testing standpoint, both World Athletics and World Boxing came out with a policy requiring an SRY gene test prior to their world championships, their respective world championships. And so it was a bit of a scramble to try to figure out the testing aspect of it, because you have to, number one, the test had to be a specific type of test. It's not necessarily very common to get this specific test in the United States. And so we, our role in that was helping to identify labs and options for the athletes to be able to get that testing. And based on that experience and knowing that some other international federations likely will be following suit, figuring out how we can make this a seamless process. And it's also very costly. And so figuring out how we can make this cost effective and keep records and so on and so forth is where we are now, but we have a good process in place.
And as far as the board goes, we had actually several board discussions about adjusting the policy to be in compliance with the executive order, which we felt a responsibility to address. And fortunately, the executive order that is designed to protect women's sports in the United States is very consistent with the trend internationally. As Doc says, World Athletics, World Boxing, World Aquatics, FIS, most of the international sports federations are moving in this direction. The IOC has actually set up a working group of experts. They actually haven't said who the experts are, but they expect people who have a scientific background are looking at this issue, and they're going to actually opine on it after Milan Cortina. But the expectation is that this is where world sport, international sport, will go.
Any other questions out there? 4:45 left, so.
See a hand.
Hello? Hi. Sebastian Coe has recently said that sports like cross-country running, judo, and cyclocross could be part of the Winter Olympics as soon as 2030. For cross-country in particular, he said part of the reason was to give African nations a place at the Winter Games. Maybe for Sarah or Rocky, what do you think of these plans?
It makes great sense that any international federation is thinking about how to drive innovation and growth in their sport, and the ability to do that across both the Olympic Games and the Winter Olympic Games, and certainly the para community is also trying to expand their sport platform. So it's logical and it's the right thing to do. And I think we have to give, you know, Seb and World Athletics a lot of credit for pushing the envelope and trying to stay at the forefront of innovating and thinking differently about how to present their sport in both. How do you engage more athletes across the world in participation, but then also, and how do you make it compelling for audiences? And I think World Athletics has certainly been a leader in doing that. So we're excited that the opportunity, if there's an opportunity globally, there's an opportunity for Team USA, and we're going to follow suit, and you can bet we're going to be right there trying to be competitive.
I want to add just one thing. You touched on it, and I think this is where Seb is going. The Winter Games today have 80 nations that can effectively compete. It's all the countries that have winter. But Africa, big parts of Southeast Asia, South America, many of those countries don't have a heritage of winter sports. So if we think about the opportunity for the Winter Games to include as many countries as possible, given there's a limitation that all of the sports have to be conducted on snow or ice, we have to be creative. And if we can do something that allows African countries or Asian countries that have never competed in the Winter Games to compete in the Winter Games, then the experience becomes more universal. That's definitely a worthwhile goal.
Question over here. Hi. Jason Gewirtz with Sports Travel Magazine. This is for Rocky and Sarah. You mentioned the very wide footprint of these games. I was wondering if you could expand just a little bit on what unique challenges this footprint has presented for you in terms of getting your staff and athletes around, and as a follow-up, what you want spectators who might travel over there to know about the unique nature of these games.
Yeah, I think what it did is made us better, because it forced us to collaborate earlier and more often with national governing bodies, as Doc Finoff said. with other countries to make sure that our athletes get everything they need. And so for future games, that's going to set us up, because now we have a formula for if it's decentralized, we know how to handle it. And we know really how to collaborate better and what the needs are of each NGB. And so actually, I think it's brought us closer to our NGB partners and collaborating more with them. I think the opportunity for us going forward, when we look at what we can learn from Milan Cortina in this, it's gonna not only help us in the summer games in LA, but in future games as well.
And I'll add from a spectator perspective, I think the key for spectators is recognize the distances between these competition events and venues and be realistic about the time commitments required to get from one place to the next. I think, you know, this will be the classic pack your patience, because there will be some travel time. And I think as long as people plan accordingly, and are ready to attack those distances if traveling between clusters is something they want to do, the experience will be great. But if you're not anticipating or you haven't focused on those distances, I think it could generate frustration. So we're telling everybody, build your plan properly and you're going to have an amazing experience.
And what an experience that would be to be there. But if you can't be there and you want to watch at home instead or stream on Peacock, that can be done as well. All right.
Or both,
or all of the above. That is true.
Thanks to the USOPC for providing the feed of that opening event here at the Team USA Media Summit in New York. That was NBC's Ahmed Farid hosting. In other Olympics news, there are concerns as to whether the ice rink and other venues will be complete in time for the Games on February 6th. Many of the 98 construction projects surrounding the Games are still underway. However, most of the athletes we've spoken with aren't very concerned about that at this point. Truthfully, many are just still trying to qualify themselves. As Rocky Harris said, only 14 athletes have qualified by name so far for Team USA, with nearly 300 Americans expected to compete in Milan Cortina. An Olympic send-off event has been canceled at UBS Arena. The arena was supposed to host the NHL All-Star Game before it was announced NHL players would be able to play in the Olympics. Then the plans changed to a send-off event there. Now those plans have been completely scrapped. UBS will instead host the 2027 NHL All-Star Game. We're going to continue sifting through all of our conversations here in New York, and we'll be featuring them in the upcoming weeks on Quest for Gold as we move closer and closer to the Games, now 100 days out. I'm Ryan Burr. We'll see you here next week.